Amen. Good singing, great songs. We're going to be in Judges 14 today, and all verses. We're going to read all 20 verses, so try to follow along and not lose track as we go. I'll try to read it very dramatically so that we can follow, but we want to get all of the thought here. So beginning in verse 1, hear the word of the Lord. Samson went down to Timnah, and at Timnah he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and mother, I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. But his father and mother said to him, is there not a woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all our people that you must go to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? But Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she is right in my eyes. His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. Then Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah, and they came to the vineyards of Timnah, and behold, a young lion came toward him, roaring. Then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion in pieces, as one tears a young goat. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and she was right in Samson's eyes. After some days, he returned to take her. And he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. He scraped it out into his hands and went on eating as he went. And he came to his father and mother and gave some to them, and they ate. But he did not tell them that he had scraped the honey from the carcass of the lion. His father went down to the woman, and Samson prepared a feast there, for so the young men used to do. As soon as the people saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. And Samson said to them, let me now put a riddle to you. If you can tell me what it is within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes. But if you cannot tell me what it is, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes. And they said to him, put your riddle that we may hear it. And he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet. And in 3 days they could not solve the riddle. On the fourth day they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband to tell us what the riddle is, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us here to impoverish us? And Samson's wife wept over him and said, you only hate me. You do not love me. You have put a riddle to my people, and you have not told me what it is. And he said to her, behold, I have not told my father nor my mother, and shall I tell you? She wept before him the 7 days their feast lasted, and on the seventh day he told her, because she pressed him hard. Then she told the riddle to her people. And the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? He said to them, if you have not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and struck down 30 men of the town and took their spoil and gave the garments to those who had told the riddle. In hot anger, he went back to his father's house. And Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his best man. Wow. There's a movie right there, right? So what an amazing series of events that occurred in Samson's life. God is working without telling us everything. God is working without telling us everything. Don't you like that? That God is always doing something, but he does not always tell us what he is doing. And many times what he is doing baffles us. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And in all of the mess and all of the failures of this world and the chaos of this world and all of our own failures and all of our own shortcomings and sin, God is accomplishing his purpose through frailing, faulty, and foolish individuals like you and like me. Isn't that amazing? I wish I was perfect. I wish I never made a mistake. I wish I was the perfect husband, and on and on and on it goes. And we probably all do. But that's just not the case, because we sinned with Adam in the garden and we are tainted, and sin grabs our heart and rules our heart. But we can find peace and hope that God is working, even though he doesn't tell us everything. One author put it this way: while Yahweh's agenda is being achieved, the course of Samson's life is all downhill, a fact reflected by the fivefold repetition of the Hebrew verb to go down. So in this passage, five times it says, he went down, he went down, he went down. Samson's father went down. And I don't believe that's an accident by the author of Judges. He's wanting us to know, I think, he just keeps going down and down and down. Yet God is still using him. And that's our focus in this study, not so much to see the judges, but to see God in the judges. So let's go through this account here. First of all, verses 1 to 4, God is not obligated to tell us what he is doing. Verses 1 to 4. And we skip right to, we went at the end of chapter 13 where Manoah's wife gave birth to Samson, and all of a sudden we just jump right to his adulthood, kind of like Jesus. We're told of Jesus' birth, and we just jump right into pretty much his adulthood. We're not told a lot of Samson's childhood. We're not told any of it at all. And so now we get our first glimpse into Samson's character and his life. Now remember, at this time, marriages were arranged by families. You didn't go to school and see some young, good-looking gal or guy that you kind of, you know, were sweet on, and you worked all that out. No, mom and dad would have picked somebody before you, maybe when you were a young child. And they would work out all of the financial obligations. Although in this case, it was a little older for Samson. But that's kind of what's going on here. So he goes down into a place he should not have gone to, which is just part of Samson's life. And he checks out a woman there. He sees a woman. And, you know, the scriptures make it very nice for us. And he says, I saw one of the daughters of Philistine. Now get her for me. She pleases me. Today, somebody might say, she's pretty hot, you know, or I won't say anything else. But, you know, you get the idea, right? And his demand in the Hebrew language is very emphatic. Get her for me. Get her for me. She pleases me. I like her. I want her. I don't care about anything else. Now, there's a glitch here, though. She is a Philistine. And his parents were not too thrilled with the fact that he had picked a Philistine. And some say they objected simply for cultural and ethnic reasons, because the Philistines were seen sort of as lower class. And there were several cultures that practiced circumcision. And notice that they called him the uncircumcised Philistine. David said that to Goliath, this uncircumcised Philistine. So some think that it was more of a culture thing. Isn't there somebody better than these lower class Philistines? I don't think that's the case. I think it is more of a spiritual reasoning, because just as David said, I'm not scared of this uncircumcised Goliath. I have God on my side. And so that's what I see here. But that was his counsel to Samson. Isn't there anybody among our own people? I mean, that's some good counsel there. So they put up a little bit of a stink here and give a wise suggestion there in verse 3. And why do you have to go down and take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? It's a great suggestion, but guess what? It wasn't God's plan. Now, this is a little bit of a baffling chapter to me, because there's a lot of things that don't on the surface make sense to us. Great advice, because there were some biblical prohibitions about who you could marry, and the Philistines weren't necessarily listed in the Canaanite prohibition, but they definitely were a part of it, and the principle applied. So that's some pretty good advice, but yet it wasn't God's plan. God's plan doesn't always make sense. He doesn't have to tell us everything. So, look at verse 4. Now, here is something that's a little bit disturbing, a little bit of tension here. Great advice, verse 3. But notice what verse 4 tells us. His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord who was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. Now, it's not wise to marry a Philistine. It's not wise to bring other religions into your home to pull you away from God. It's not wise. In fact, that's the reason. Listen to what Deuteronomy 7 says. You shall not intermarry with them, giving your daughters to their sons or taking their daughters for your sons, for they would turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. It had nothing to do with being black or yellow or white or whatever, or living here or living there, or being rich or being poor. The main reason, the only reason why God told them do not marry in other nations was because they would present their gods to the Israelites and they would turn them away from God. For they would turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. Deuteronomy chapter 7. Now, some say verse 4, Samson is seeking an opportunity to defeat the Philistines. I disregard that totally. I believe this is talking about the Lord. His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord. The Lord was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. So, it's an interesting dilemma here, I think. It's not a wise decision, but yet God is in control and he's going to use this unwise decision for his purposes. It kind of sounds like, God, what? So let's just go on here further here. Samson is operating out of sheer personal desire. Sheer sensual desire. I saw a gal, she was hot, and I want her. That's what he said. This woman pleased him, and he demands, doesn't listen to his father, doesn't care about the scriptures, I want her. God is using all of this to bring about his purposes. Now, God was in it. Isn't that amazing? Samson didn't know God was in it. Samson's parents didn't know it. Remember the angel of the Lord told them that your boy is going to save my people? He will be a Nazarite set apart to me from birth, in the womb even? Now this doesn't make sense to them. How can our boy do what you said if he's marrying a Philistine? But they didn't know God was in it. But God knew it. God knew the secret. There's a lot of secrets in chapter 4, by the way. God has a secret here. He doesn't tell them. Samson has some secrets, and we read that in the passage. One author said this and said it much better than I could. So, quote, this does not mean that they were wrong to object Samson's desires and action, nor does it mean that Samson's desires were virtuous or that his bullheadedness was right. It means that neither Samson's foolishness nor his stubbornness is going to prevent Yahweh from accomplishing his design. Yahweh can and will use the sinfulness or stupidity of his servants as the camouflage for bringing his secret will to pass. And that's a great comfort for us. Let me ask us all today. How many times have you or I, we have been disappointed or even crushed by a spouse or a family member, a son or a daughter, a grandson, a granddaughter, a friend, a company we worked for, an organization, the list could keep going. How many times have we been crushed like maybe Samson's parents were? Wait a minute, he's called God. What's going on here? How many times did it seem like God was nowhere around, not involved, not caring, not moving for his purpose or glory? How many times in our life did it seem like God simply, where are you? I think like Job said, I go forward, you're not there. I go backward, you're not there. I go left, you're not there. I go right, you're not there. How many times does it seem like your failure or your bad decisions or life circumstances caused you to get in such a mess that there's no way God could ever fix this? Many times, all of us, right? How often do you beat yourself up knowing you could have been a better parent, a better husband, a better wife, a better grandparent, a better worker, and the list could go on and on? How many times do we beat ourselves up for our failures and our shortcomings and our weaknesses and thinking that, God, there's no way that you could ever use me because I just never measure up? All of us could probably check those boxes today. But isn't it something that God can still use us? And he's not obligated to tell us what he's doing, even through our failures. I thought this was great. One person said this, but his father and mother did not realize it was from Yahweh. What we don't know may yet prove to be our deepest comfort. What we don't know may yet prove to be our deepest comfort. Well, what does that mean? It means when we can't figure things out, what we don't know, we know God knows. And that can indeed be our biggest comfort. So let's move on. Secondly, God has the power to use the imperfect. Verses 5 and 6. Well, Samson's parents did not change his mind, and so they headed down to make the contract official. So they're heading down to Timnah. They're going to get with the woman's parents, and they're going to work out, you know, a couple donkeys, a couple camels, you know, a pack of baseball cards, whatever they used to trade back then, you know, to seal the deal. Somewhere along the way, Samson and his parents get separated. They must have went into Walmart or something and got separated, and they just started to head on down there. So this next event happens without Samson's parents knowing. So now Samson is going to have a secret. God had a secret. I'm doing this and I'm not telling you through this way. Now Samson's going to have a secret. And as we read, a young lion, which means strong and powerful, attacked him. And Samson just rips the lion apart. You ever seen a lion? Not the ones at the zoo that just sit and eat, you know, and get fat and lazy and... I mean, these are, when a lion's roaring, he's already gone from his quiet stance and he's attacking. And Samson just doesn't have any weapons at all, nothing in his hand, verse 6. He tore the lion in pieces as one tears a young goat. Now, I don't even think I could tear a young goat, okay? But apparently, you can tear a young goat, I guess. This is absolutely amazing. But notice verse 6. The Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. And although he had nothing in his hand, he tore the lion in pieces. It was the Spirit of God that enabled Samson to do this amazing feat. Now, I had some questions pop in my little brain. Was this the first time that ever happened to Samson? Was this the first time that Samson ever experienced this gift? Or was he in high school in Israel on the football team, down by 6 and needed a touchdown? And he just tore through air. We just don't know. I got a feeling that maybe this was the first time that this happened. Was it a surprise to him as it was maybe to the lion? Wow, I don't know. Interesting thought, though. If it was the first time, if it was a surprise, what was he thinking afterward? What would you be thinking? And I'd be going, whoa, I'm Mr. Universe. Don't know. You know what? I always think we always picture Samson how. And if you've ever seen a painting of Samson, how does the artist paint Samson? Oh, my. I mean, he's buffed. I mean, he's just, you know, I mean, he's just bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger, no? What are you doing? Whatever he said, right? I mean, we always have this paintings, and I've always pictured in my mind this just huge, just, you know what I think? I think Samson looked like every ordinary man. Because think about this. If he did have huge monster muscles, and who gets the glory? He does a little bit, doesn't he? God's Spirit rushed upon him and gave him the power. And maybe, oh, just maybe, he was 6'3" and skinny. And, well, he wasn't bald. We know that because you couldn't cut it. He had long hair, so throw that out. But I really think that Samson, and the Bible doesn't tell us, but I really think Samson probably just looked like an ordinary man. And I don't think he had these huge, you know, Hulk smash type muscles and things. So what do we learn about this little incident here? We learn that Samson And Samson learns this, that the power of God that enabled him to defeat a lion can enable him to rescue God's people and defeat the Philistines. If God could strengthen him to do that, God can use him to defeat the enemy, which he was called to do, even in the womb. Because God's power is complete to save us. God's power is complete to enable us to do everything in life that we need to be able to do. He provided strength in the past. He'll now provide strength for you, Samson, in the future. Remember David when he was just a little shepherd boy? And he's facing Goliath again? Do you remember what strength David relied upon? What he did to give him encouragement? He remembered the past. And if you forgot it, I've got it right here. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them. He has defied the armies of the living God. And David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, the Lord be with you." So Samson is the same principle here. He should learn, wow, what God can do. And he's been called to deliver God's people from the Philistines. God can do that as well. So in other words, we learn this principle. Whatever happens today is preparing us for something tomorrow. Whatever we're going through today is preparing us for something tomorrow. So that means our daily, sometimes boring, mundane lives have purpose. So whatever God brings in your life today is bringing it into your life today for something for you to use him for him tomorrow. All right, thirdly, God's plan and purpose will be carried out, always carried out. And that's a great thrill for us who fail and are weak and faulty. So verse 7 says, he went down and talked with the woman, and again, maybe he got a closer look at her this time, and she was right in Samson's eyes. I don't know, maybe from a distance he said, "You know, I think she looks pretty good." And now he's a little closer and he's going, "Whoo, yeah, she is really nice," right? And he likes what he sees. So they prepare the contract for marriage, and on the way, something happens and he messes up pretty bad. He sees the dead lion, and something unusual is happening too. It's very unusual to have bees create a colony or whatever, a swarm, to make honey inside a dead putrefying lion. It's just not normal. You're not going to set up camp there. But some say maybe the weather was such where it didn't putrefy as fast or something, but some say that maybe this was just another miracle of God. And I'll be honest, I never thought about that. But I thought it was interesting that even this was a picture of the thriving bees in the honey inside a dead carcass, which was a picture of God's people who should be thriving inside the dead carcass of Canaan, where they were supposed to be a testimony rather than letting Canaan bleed off onto them. Interesting thought. But he sees the lion. I'm going to go check out my kill. That's what we always do, right? Look at our victories. You know, yesterday, I'm always trying to find medicine in our medicine cabinet, which is like, oh, it's like diving into those balls at McDonald's, you know. You're just not going to find anything. And so I said, "I'm sick of this." And so I preached a funeral at one, and I got home, and I got some wood, and I cut it, and I made little tiny shelves around it, and I stacked all the pills around it, and I was so proud of that. I can now find my vitamin C without having to get a vitamin to have vitamin strength to get the vitamin C. And so, you know, about two or three times I'm walking by that hallway, and I'm going, I'm opening that door. "Hey, that looks pretty good." And I shut the door. We all do it, right? I'm the only sinner. Okay. Well, I think Samson was going to go see his strength and his work. And so he goes and sees the dead carcass there, and he sees the bees and making the honey. So some time had passed, and he breaks his Nazirite vow. He touches the dead body. Not supposed to. He's unclean now. And so he also takes the honey and he eats it, which revives him. And then he does something else. He gives it to mom and dad, which makes them unclean, and they don't even know it. But he doesn't tell them. He's got another secret. He's got another secret. But you know, even in this rebellion, even in this failure, God is still going to use him, and God is still going to carry out his purpose. And what a blessed truth. This comes up over and over and over again. And now, this is not an excuse for Samson. God's going to use me no matter what. I'll just do whatever I want. I'll marry a Philistine. I'll touch a dead body. I'll just, you know, do whatever I want to do. No. It's not for Samson to use as an excuse, and it doesn't excuse Samson either. It's simply God's amazing grace at work with faulty, failing sinners. And we should be thankful for that. God will always accomplish his purpose. We may miss some of the benefit of it. We may suffer for our actions, but God's purpose and plan will always be accomplished. So we should never seek a carefree road of presuming on God's grace. But what a comfort to know that even though we're not perfect, he can use us. So who is God seeking? God's seeking faithful servants, not perfect servants. There are no perfect servants. There was one, Jesus Christ. That's it. God is seeking faithful servants, not celebrities. The church in our day are seeking celebrities. God is not seeking celebrities. God is seeking faithful servants. Faithful, those are my heroes. Those are the heroes of my life, faithful people. God is seeking faithful servants, not timid servants who always say, someone can do it better than me, so I'm not going to do anything. I could not tell you how many times I've heard that down through the years. Well, you know, I just can't do it. Somebody can do it much better than me. Well, God didn't call anybody else better than you. He called you. And I've learned something in life, and here's some news for you. Here's the 9 o'clock news, which is really today the 8 o'clock news. There is always someone who can do it better than you. There's always somebody who can do it better than you. But God maybe didn't call them. So God is seeking faithful servants, no excuses, but isn't it a blessing to know that God's plan and purpose will be carried out always, even though we are never as perfect as we should be. Next, God is not limited by weak and inferior people. This is closely related to the previous point, verses 10 to 18. God is not limited by us. Samson's father goes down and makes the deal. It's customary to have a feast. And the groom gets to pick the games he wants to play. Now, at our weddings, we do those weird dances. You know, the chicken dance and the... I may learn those at Mackenzie's wedding, and you might see me doing some of those. But I just don't know. I just don't know if I can do the chicken dance and the, you know, and the... You know, step to the left and step to the right and stand up and sit down and fight and all that. But anyway, the groom gets to pick the games, and Samson picks a game. And they give him 30 companions. I'm not going to get onto the technicalities here, but many believe that these 30 companions were actually guards. They did not trust Samson. They did not trust him because he was an Israelite. And so these 30 companions are actually 30 men to kind of keep an eye on him. Pretty smart, right? Now remember, even though they're occupied in the land by the Philistines, that didn't mean they couldn't, you know, kind of travel around. They just had to kind of, you know, put up with harassment and so forth. So he's able to go down there and he picks this lady and they're going to allow this wedding. They make the deal. It's probably good for her parents and good for Manoah and his wife. And so why are they scared of Samson? Again, I don't think he walked in like the Hulk. I think maybe they were scared the same reason the people in Jericho were scared. They had heard of the God of Israel who parted the Red Sea and who did all of these miracles. And that traveled with God's people. And also how God had delivered Israel's, God's people, using the other judges. So I think they want to keep an eye on Samson. So Samson decides the game will be a riddle. Now, this is really not fair because he's the only one that knows about the killing of the lion and the honey. So he's pretty sharp, isn't he? And so verse 14, he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet. See, Samson's also a poet. Maybe that's how he won the girl. I don't know. Anyway. And in 3 days they could not solve the riddle. So, Samson here would be the only weak link of him losing the bet, right? Because he's the only one that knows. He is the weak link. As long as he keeps his mouth shut and doesn't say a word, because he's the only one. They didn't have videos with cameras back then. Nobody could say, we've just got this in on Samson. We've seen him killing a lion. Nobody knew. All he has to do is keep his mouth shut, and he gets 30 garments. Wow. So they make the deal. It's an expensive wager. So I figured if you went and bought a nice suit at $300, I've never bought a suit for $300, or had a suit bought for me, I don't think through. Let's just say I've seen them priced. In fact, you can go way higher than $300. So I'm just going very conservative here. 30 suits at $300 a piece would be, in our day, $9,000. Now, that's a pretty good chunk of change. 30 suits in my closet, man. I could look different each day of the month. But there'd be some pretty wild colors to look different, right? There's only so many colors. And then he also, the deal was, you got a pair of undershorts. Now, I didn't figure that cost out because I, you know, Hanes or whatever, I don't know. But it was a suit, an undergarment. So let's just say $10,000 in our day. So let's say you went to a wedding last night, you've got a wedding in 7 days here in the 2022. And you're a part of this, and you're a part of the deal. Oh, my goodness, this is a big deal. $10,000. 7 days to figure out an impossibility unless he leaks it. Well, they're getting a little nervous, these guys. 3 days, they couldn't solve the riddle. So what do? You got to do some probing. Who better to go to than the wife-to-be? So they go into Mrs. Samson-to-be, which I guess was technically considered his wife now, and they offer their love and their kindness. And basically they said, if you can't get the answer to the riddle out of Samson, we are going to burn you, your father, and all of your property down. Woo! Now, she's got some pressure. Her life's, it's just, we'll burn you, your father's house, with fire. And then they say, have you invited us here to this wedding to impoverish us? Which lets us know that was quite a costly bet. And so you know the story. We read it there, and she cries, and she weeps, and she says, you don't love me. If you loved me, you would. And by the way, any of you young people, if you ever go on a date with anybody, and they say, if you love me, you would, and that you leave right away. Samson was stupid. And you don't love me, and you don't care about me, and if you love me, you tell me the riddle. She pulls out her Kleenex, which was probably camel skin, and blew her nose, and she's weeping, and she's sad, and she's not doing any dishes or nothing. And finally, on the seventh day, after much badgering and tears, he gives in. The only link that would cause him to lose. And, of course, she immediately goes and tells the 30 companions, because she doesn't want to burn and she doesn't want to have her father in her house burn. And I love verse 18. And the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, and I love what he called his wife. Isn't this great? If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. Isn't that great? If you hadn't plowed with my heifer. That was probably very loving back then, right? I wouldn't recommend it today on Valentine's Day, And in fact, when I come home and go into the bedroom and check with my wife who's recovering from knee surgery, hey, heifer, how's it going? I got a feeling I might get something thrown at me, but I ain't trying that. But he basically knows. He knows that the only way they could answer the riddle was to go to somebody who knew. And now he was the only one that knew, plus his wife-to-be, the hottie. And she spilled the beans. So what do we see here? Samson's got a great weakness, doesn't he? Now, does this not remind you of another weakness coming up in a couple chapters with Delilah? Same thing, right? She begged him, and then we'll get to that. A weakness when pressured day after day after day. I do not like them, Sam, I am. I do not like them. I do not like green eggs and ham. I don't like them on a train. I don't like them in the rain. I don't like them with a fox or in a box. Or I don't like them with meatloaf. I don't like them. Nothing rhymes with loaf. I guess that's why. But basically, that's what she did, right? Badgered, 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 badgered. And he had a weakness. He gave in. Just like my weakness and yours, right? We give in. We give in. So knowledge of our weaknesses can be a great blessing, can they not? Imagine if Samson would have learned from this when he got with Delilah. Never should have got with Delilah, but he did. You think if he just could have learned from this, wait a minute, the last time a woman badgered me, it cost me 10 grand, sort of. Taking our weaknesses lightly can be a wide open path to destruction. Pride. Remember what Peter said in Matthew 26? I will never deny you. I think his heart was right. I think he was sincere. What did he do? He denied it. We're all the same. But aren't you thrilled that God isn't limited by weak and inferior people? Because that's me, and that's you, that's all of us. Oh, he was given over to such awful, sinful characteristics, and the only thing positively that could happen in his life was for God to take over, which leads us to the last part. God is in the little things as well as the big. God is in the little things as well as the big. So we now are going to have an answer to chapter 13, verse 5, why God called Samson to deliver his people. He will begin to save Israel. And notice verse 19. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. The Spirit of God rushed upon him again. He killed a lion by the Spirit of God's power, and now he's going to do something else. He goes down, I owe these 30 men 30 garments and 30 underwears. So how does he go get it? He goes down to Ascalon, just kills 30 men and takes off their clothes and takes off their undergarments, and surely he probably wrapped them and put a bow on them and took them back to the wedding feast. Isn't that amazing? Well, we look at that and go, well, that's horrible. This is just terrible. What kind of man are we dealing here? But listen to what one author said, which was really good. We are not dealing with Samson's temper, but the Spirit's power. The Philistines were the enemy. The Philistines were the evil, God-rebelling enemy of God's people who are bringing them under bondage. And God called this man to begin to deliver them. This is the beginning of the deliverance. Wow. Isn't that amazing? It's one of those things, this just doesn't make sense. But the Spirit of God came upon him, and he went and struck 30 men and took their spoil in the garments. Now he went back to the wedding feast, his father's house, angry. And then in verse 20, oh my goodness, Samson's wife-to-be was given to his best man. How'd you like that deal? So make sure you pick a really ugly, goofy best man, all right? So maybe you can prevent that from happening. And I think, for the most part, you and I tend to believe that the Spirit of God can't rush on people anymore. I mean, we see this as just a very little thing, just 30, but this was part of the big thing. And God, the Spirit, came upon Samson, even in his weaknesses, and used him again. Now, he's heading for a whole lot more trouble, which we'll get to in the weeks ahead. But I think sometimes we put God in a box and think he could never work in his life, he could never work in her life, he's too far gone. Look what he did in Samson's life. We have to be careful not to think that God cannot work. He can save people, Romans 1:16. The gospel is the power of God to salvation. He can change people, Galatians 5:17. If any man be in Christ, he's a new creation. We just have to continue to pray and pray and pray and trust God. Well, let's land the plane. I just want to review real quick. We'll have him up on the screen. Just two reminders, God doesn't always do things the way we think he should. Does he? He just does it. Secondly, God isn't finished when it looks like it's all over. I think Manoah and his wife were probably pretty brokenhearted when he went to get this Philistine lady. But God wasn't done. Don't give up. Thirdly, God can and will work through us even in our weaknesses. Isn't that amazing? Don't use it as an excuse to fail, but we just will never be perfect. We'll always fall short. God can work. Fourthly, God is always working for his people, even in the smallest ways. Don't miss the smallest ways. 30 didn't seem like much compared to thousands and thousands of Philistines, which we'll get to that. But God is always working in his time, in his way, even if it seems very small right now. And lastly, God is the only deliverer deserving of our life, our love, and our obedience. All of these judges, what have we seen? Every one of them. Fail, fail, fail. Fall short, fall short, fall short. Always looking, always causing us to look at the true deliverer, Jesus. Father, thank you for the account of a man who's just like us, and we're just like him. Thank you for being a God who loves us in our failures, can use us in our weaknesses, can forgive us when we sin, can use us, though someone's always more accomplished, more talented, better gifted. But you're calling for faithful people. Thank you, Lord, for the encouragement and the warnings today to be careful of our weaknesses, to learn from what you did for us in the past, and to hold on to that when we blaze out into the future. And help us, Lord, to always seek you and you alone as the deliverer who'll never fail us, who'll never make a mistake in our life, who'll never let us down. God, thank you for your grace. I think when we get to heaven, the first thing we'll be amazed at is grace. How can you love us? How can you stick with us in all of our failures? Thank you for showing us once again in this passage today, grace. So Lord, touch our hearts and move on our hearts as we sing and as we leave this place. In Christ's precious name, amen.